Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening. This is Nate Klarfeld from Fort Lauderdale, and this is Stonewall Live, the best of gay and lesbian book, film, and media talk on Blog Talk Radio. Tonight, I've got Dr. Charles Atkins, who's an author, board-certified psychiatrist, written several mystery novels, some about with a forensic psychiatrist he's going to talk to us about, others, strange mystery novels, and some also nonfiction. Anyway, here we go. Charles Atkins, how are you tonight?
I'm doing great. How's it going?
Good, good. Was that a crazy introduction or what? Okay, you... We're going to talk mostly about your book, Vultures of Twilight, which is your newest book. Just came out, like, how recent?
Coming out right now. The official United States release is May 1st.
May 1st. We're going to talk a little bit about releasing and stuff like that. I read the book a few weeks ago. I know, I get advanced copies. It's a cool job, huh? And I loved it. It just, like, was one of those page-turners. Charles, how did you get started in writing, and what's this connection where you move back and forth between psychiatry and writing? Tell us about that.
Okay, I've always written, ever since I was a little kid, and did, you know, cute little stories my mom would put on the refrigerator. Then, when I was deciding to get out of the arts, I started out in theater. I became an EMT, and when I was in theater, I was writing really, really bad theater and performing it in Manhattan. So then when I'm deciding to go to medical school, I become an EMT in Boston and start writing about what I'm seeing on the ambulance. And bit by bit, this morphed into a daily practice of writing essentially clinical stories. And then I was writing a bunch of short stories, trying to get published. Now, there's a whole lot of feedback. Is that me or you?
No, I'm not hearing it. That means it's not going on the air.
Okay, is that better?
That's much better, yes.
Okay. Yeah, so I started doing a bunch of short stories, getting them published in a variety of literary journals and even some medical journals, and one of the characters I've been writing about, who was a young man with manic depression, bipolar, I decided to do a story of him at my age then, which would have been in my mid-30s.
Uh-huh.
And it just turned out that in the story, his psychiatrist is murdered, and I figured, okay, this is the start of a book. And so I kept going, really wanting to do something a little bit political, which was to do a mainstream novel, you know, in this case, a murder mystery, where the hero has a serious mental illness. And, you know, then doing everything wrong as new authors do and, you know, sending it out to publishers who were rejecting it left and right. And finally I went to a mystery convention in New York, the only one I've ever been to, and I met Otto Penzler, who used to run, or actually still runs, the Mysterious Bookstore and Mysterious Press. And he said something that I thought was really important. He said in the 20 years he ran Mysterious, he would read unagented manuscripts but never once published one. At which point I realized I was doing things real wrong. Switched tacks, got myself an agent, and from there was able to get my first book deal. At that time with St. Martin's Press, who published The Portrait, which was my first novel. And then a follow-up book when I was working with a lot of really troubled teenagers, again, using the interface of psychiatry and being a novelist and wanting to write a book where, again, using a mystery, I take the reader through how a child grows up to become a sociopath.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, sort of like my own little Frankenstein story.
Right. I've read some of your things, both fiction and nonfiction, because I have access to some medical journals that I found. And what was interesting is when you think, what would it take for a normal person to take a, you know, an axe to a loved one? And I think no, that's one of your quotes. Actually, I found where I wrote it down. And really, you know, I started thinking about that and how fascinating that must be. As a psychiatrist, I don't think a lot of people, you know, out there know this, but I my partner is a psychiatrist. Everyone out there on my little radio audience knows this. And they kind of, they are analyzed themselves and they self-analyze. And is this writing kind of a catharsis, kind of a working out some of your own issues?
You know, I wish it were. What it does, though, is clinically, in terms of working with patients, when you put yourself in the shoes of someone else, you learn about the thing it is you're writing about. So I actually, it's a way of educating myself as well as educating the reader, but wanting, you know, particularly with the fiction books, wanting it to be done in a way that it's not preachy. I'm just getting the information out there by telling a story.
Okay. How much research do you have to do for your novel? I mean, they're incredibly detailed. I'm going to go through a couple of topics. The one that is just now coming out, Vultures of Twilight, is about Greenfield, Connecticut. Antique dealers are being murdered. Well-heeled elders are downsizing, getting sick, moving to nursing homes and dying. You've got books about forensic psychiatry. But more than just the medicine, the detail in the antiques and the nursing homes and the other things that I – how much research are you doing? And how much
– usually stuff that I'm into. So in Vultures of Twilight, which was a real labor of love, pretty much every Saturday and Sunday I'm out trawling the flea market. And I live in a town in Connecticut which is pretty much based on the antiques industry. And so Vultures of Twilight, which has gone through a lot of changes to get to the form it is now, to where it's actually been published as, you know, my first really gay novel, but this is one where it didn't start out that way, went through a long process to get, you know, a publisher to green light it and say, yes, go ahead. But only if you do it as a series. It was something that I just love the whole antiques industry.
Right.
But the initial idea came from the two women protagonists started out much older in the earlier drafts.
Really?
And it was when I was working as a geriatric psychiatrist. So at the time, you know, I was writing for St. Martin's Press. I had a editor, Ruth Cavan, who's kind of a legend in the mystery field, who was in her 80s at the time. She recently passed away. So I figured, okay, you know, I'll do my follow-up novel to the portrait, but this time I'll have two older, you know, women protagonists. I'll turn into, you know, Agatha Christie and become Miss Marple, and she'll love it. No, she hated it. So she turned it down flatly. It went into a drawer, and over the years I've resurrected it, rewritten it, and finally, my agent, I have one of the world's best agents, a man named Al Zuckerman, who has an agency called Writer's House in New York. And, you know, he really handles major, major folk. And he was meeting with Don Weiss, who was then the acquisitions editor for Allison, which was the biggest gay publisher at the time. And over the course of lunch, Al mentioned he has an out psychiatrist in Connecticut. You know, he then got back to me and said, you know, Charlie, did you ever think about doing a gay detective series?
Wow.
Which I really hadn't. But then I figured, okay, what if I take this book I wrote a long time ago, make the heroines younger, give it a love story, which it never had, which it really needed, and see what happens.
Yeah.
So I completely rewrote it. But while I was rewriting it, there were major changes that Allison and Don Weiss left, none of which I knew. So by the time I was ready to submit it to him, he was gone. Fortunately, my agent, without, you know, my really knowing, sent it to Severn, which is a British publisher that's published some of my other novels. They said, yes, absolutely, but only if it's a series. You know, can you do, you know, at least a second? And I said, sure. And so that's how this has come to be my my first gay novel.
Okay. I want to talk a little bit about gay novels. I don't know if you know my background. I don't know if you Googled me.
I have a bit.
Okay. I'm the former board chair of America's largest gay and lesbian library. I've been involved with the Stonewall National Museum and Archives. It's the largest collection, single collection of gay and lesbian books in the world, 30,000 of them in one place in a lending library, which is amazing. We also have an archive of historical stuff going back to the late 1800s. Forward, but the real thing, the real way I got involved with this is that I have done now 150 live author readings You mentioned Connecticut. You're part of Connecticut, part of the antique industry. We're part of the travel industry down here in Fort Lauderdale. A lot of the cruises, a lot of the gay cruises come through here. So almost a lot of gay authors, well-known, first-time authors, local authors, come through the Stonewall and do book readings. And I've did those for 12 years, including becoming board chair of a national nonprofit, and didn't go crazy. And here's where I put your novel, and this is why I was so excited to contact you, because you're the newest cutting edge of gay novels. Let me go through the whole history for the readers. You and I probably know what's going on. The first 100 years of gay writing up to about 1969 was the angst and the hidden and the love that dare not speak its name and usually ended in a suicide. After Stonewall, after 1969, there were all these wonderful coming out, but you got beaten in the head with, like, you know,
oh,
boom.
God, yes.
And you then committed suicide. And then, of course, yep. there was about 5-6 years there of really untold bliss, which is fortunately, because that's when I came out, between Stonewall and HIV, where there wasn't a whole lot of writing, which we really can't find a whole lot. But then we had HIV, and HIV AIDS took a big chunk of our writing. Everyone was lost and found and angry and this and that. And now we're in phase three, and we just hit phase three very recently. And phase three is this, and this is the book, this is Vultures of Twilight, and this is why your book sold and they want an extra one, and this is my own opinion, and I speak with publishers. I talked to Don about 2 days ago. He just sent me another book. I talk to him probably about once a month. He's got a new gig. But you're phase three, and phase three is the most exciting part. And phase three is you are writing wonderful books where a few characters just happen to be fabulous.
and that's what I like to read.
Me too.
I have read, I read a tremendous amount, and, you know, the whole revolution now in publishing with e-books, I'm actually reading much more, and I'm reading a tremendous amount of gay fiction.
Right.
And both in fiction and in, you know, gay movies.
Right.
I've had enough of it. I want escapism, and I don't want my protagonist who I am rooting for to, at the last minute, you know, go walking into the ocean and drowning.
I know,
himself.
Or hanging themselves or something. It's horrible. I want all these happy endings. And you know, the funny thing is, this show is about 2 years old. I do get a lot of feedback on who my listeners are. I'm terribly sorry to tell you that when you are listening to something on the internet for free, you are not a customer. You are the product. And Blog Talk Radio is using your data at this very moment. And so I know who's on the internet, kind of weird. And my audience is a lot younger than you think. I have switched you're a mature author, but I've had a lot of young adult authors. And they have great stuff now. The young adult gay fiction is the fastest selling and most profitable part of literature. I'm going to also going to switch back. I'm talking too much. I was going to ask you more questions. You mentioned e-books. You have a publisher and an agent. How do you see yourself publishing in 5 years?
Very different. I was just down, you know, I was down your way, much further south. I was in Key West, and Al Zuckman, who I mentioned, spends a lot of his time down there. So we met and had lunch, and really looking at what comes next for me, because at this point I'm two authors, and I've also done some ghostwriting, and I'm about to launch a third author. So just quickly to explain, I'm Charles Atkins, which is murder mysteries and thrillers. I'm Charles Atkins, MD, which are nonfiction books, you know, essentially Q&A books on bipolar disorder and Alzheimer's. And I'm about to do urban fantasy, which is heading into reality that goes into non-reality. And the first book that I'm hoping to get published that way is a book called Go to Hell, which is a book about the really whorish relationship between physicians and the drug companies. Mm-hmm. And it's a very standard Faust story where a handsome young researcher who has discovered a substance that will alleviate human suffering makes a deal with really the devil, who is in this case the CEO of a drug company.
Good.
And he literally is the devil. And taking it through a series of these books, and this book will probably be e-published first.
Uh-huh.
And that's really where things are heading, and it's heading
right.
that way very quickly.
Right. I had we've hosted publishers and agents from all over the country at the Stonewall, and we had somebody last week that I was shocked when I heard this, and I'm going to share this with our listeners, and you already know the answer to this. When you write a book, you're not going to go buy, you know, Vultures at Twilight came out. You're not going out and buying a BMW 750 tomorrow. Your advance wasn't $1 million, you know. This well-known mystery, he's on his 10th mystery novel, gay mystery novel. This gentleman was in our place, and he said he makes about 85 cents per book. If it's published through his agent, and you know, in the hard copy at the very end, and he has released his 11th through his blog and his social networking, uploaded it right to Amazon,
yep.
did a little bit of work, and is making about $5 a book,
yeah,
on e-publishing, and he just looks around and he said, you know, it's great, but. And what do you think the buts are?
Well, there's a lot of it's the entire game is changing right now. So for authors, there's tremendous opportunity right now because of that split. That in a traditional book, you know, you have a hardcover out, you get an advance of, you know, however many thousands of dollars if you're lucky, and you pay down the advance on sales, and you're getting maybe on a $20 hardcover, which I don't know who's buying those anymore, you get
uh-huh.
a couple bucks.
Right.
When you switch to the e-system, if you price the book under $9.99 for Amazon, it's a 75-25 split with the author getting 75%.
Right.
So you're pricing your product much lower. You're hopefully able to move a whole lot more of them, and more
right.
of the money is going to the author. Now,
mm-hmm.
who is getting squeezed out is a lot. That
right.
right now there's a very big lawsuit going on. Where I don't understand all the details, but it basically is, you know, five of the major publishing houses and iTunes are, you know, being sued for some form of, what's the word?
It's price fixing.
Kind of like,
price
yes,
fixing.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And if it's found against them, basically it's, you know, really leaving the field open to people like Amazon who are aggressively pushing the prices of e-books down.
Correct.
So the major publishers are in deep trouble right now if they can't figure out how they're going to, you know, reposition themselves in the coming years. And
right.
Amazon's in great shape. I think iTunes, where they're, you know, really moving into textbooks and, you know, trying to get an iPad into the hands of every kid, they're
right.
going to be very well positioned.
Right.
But like the Hatchet Group and Bettelsmann and these,
correct.
You know, megalithic publishers, I'm not so sure either.
And, you know, one of the things that Don kidded about me the last time I spoke to him, he said, you know, 10 years ago, like when you started writing and you mentioned with Mr. Zuckerman, he told you to go get an agent because the non-agent books weren't selling. Today, Don said to me, in a year or two or three, when we interview a new author, I'm going to ask him who's doing his social networking. What is his social, what is his personal, you know, let me see his Twitter account, let me see his Facebook account, let me see his blog, let me see his Foursquare, let me see his Twitter, and that's going to be the new agent for you, the new, you know, the new on the ground, because, you know, I'm just going to give you a little background of this show. We have a couple of thousand people listening to us live right now. We have an additional 800 plus that are going to be getting a download on iTunes in the next 15, 20 minutes automatically when the next time they tune in. Plus, for the next 5 years, this is going to be up on my website and the Stonewall National Museum's website, cross for Mystery Writers, Gay Mystery, you'll pop up. So to potentially the word of this small little internet radio show is reaching more people than read, get this, the Miami Herald book page.
Yeah, and that's exactly the challenge for authors right now is right. How do you build a platform? Because
right.
Everyone out there is blogging, but who's reading it?
Right.
And so, you know, that really is, and particularly in fiction, I think in some ways nonfiction is a bit easier. And I'll give you a for instance.
Okay.
I've recently signed on with a company that goes around the country doing essentially day-long lecture tours for social workers and people like that who need continuing medical education units to maintain
right.
their licensure.
Correct.
So I'm going to do day-long talks on bipolar disorder, and it's, you know, these three-day mini tours. I'm going out to Ohio, so it'll be like, you know, Cleveland,
right.
Cincinnati, Blue Ash. And what they do is they'll, you know, blast 20,000 mailers, blast the internet, and all of that will be around bipolar. I will expect to see spikes in the sales of my bipolar book, which I'm, you know, probably
right.
going to be updating over the next year. And so that was one of those almost gimme kind of situations that this is really going to help a tremendous amount in terms of getting
right.
information out that I want to get out around bipolar and, you know, hopefully sell some books.
Sure. Yeah.
For fiction, it's a lot trickier.
Yeah.
You know, barring getting Oprah or major endorsement from somebody who says, you know, this book changed my life and I'm going to become a lesbian now, it's you know, really building your reader base person by person almost.
Right.
Yes, Oprah said, I loved it. I'm a lesbian now.
Right. Oh, no, I'm a happy lesbian. Let's be happy. Let's have a happy
yes,
lesbian.
Yes, no angst ridden.
Right.
Although at some point you have to give, you know, if you're going to maintain
right.
a romantic line in a series,
right.
you've got to give some tension to the romance.
Oh, of course. I mean, I'm unhappy at the end. I'm unhappy at the end. Yeah, of course.
Oh,
of
absolutely.
Course.
But there needs to be something, some potential, you know, devastating or jealousy or misunderstanding.
Right. Right. Oh, I really enjoyed your books. Let me just share with the readers or the listeners tonight. Excuse me, Charles, Dr. Atkins. What should I call? I didn't even ask you what I should call you. I'll call you.
Oh, Charlie's good.
Charlie's good. I'm a retired pediatric dentist also. So I know a lot of this. What the things you were talking about, the continuing education and all the other things. But here's what your books are wonderful. They're well written, well edited. Couldn't even find a typo. It's kind of fun. I do those things. I'm OCD. But we also had your flower descriptions, your get into the moment. I had to stay up one night and read one, couldn't go to bed. Those are the kind of novels that really are fun. In my line, what I'm doing now with the show, I get the democratization of the internet and self-publishing and publishing up, you know, loading things right up to Amazon and selling them right away. I have seen a ton of unedited, horrid stuff.
Well, and that's the flip side right there, is
right.
what is happening as this wild west of publishing, that we're going from a publishing world where it was very exclusive.
Yes.
Getting an agent and getting a publisher was horribly difficult. You got rejected left and right. And, you know, with 10 books behind me and, you know, I don't know how many articles and other stuff I've written, I still get a ton of rejection.
Sure.
Where it's moving to is now anyone can publish anything anywhere,
mm-hmm.
and it can be total crap. So what is being lost or potentially lost are all those layers of refining, you know, the
right.
prose, the story, that, you know, something like... you know, one of my recent novels called The Prodigy was this forensic psychiatrist.
Right.
It went through several 50-page outlines, which would get totally rewritten, you know, scrapped, put back together, you know, then going back and forth with my agent with the drafts of this novel in a very laborious way
mm-hmm.
before it finally made it to the publisher, who then does their final edit, their copy edit, so that what you have is a polished book.
Right. And
who the hell is going to go through that if,
right.
you know, you can just, you know, finish it. Ah, that's good enough. Have a few friends read it. Do you like it? What do I need to fix? You know, boom, boom, boom. Up it goes.
Right. Exactly. You're exactly right. And let me just say something. The book that you just described that went through that horrible Sisyphus going up a mountain,
mm-hmm.
when you read it, there are, you don't see that. You don't see the artifice yet. You don't see the work. You don't see it being worked out. You just it sounds like you sat down with a glass of brandy and started talking, or whatever your poison is. I'm being serious. You've got a real chatty style, and that's what that's a polished author, and it's harder than it looks. And I want people to know out there to know. And we've gotten to the last 5 minutes of the interview. It's the fastest 30 minutes of your life, right? And this is where I talk about, I love to talk about this because every gay young person I speak to under the age, everyone's younger than me, has a novel they want to write. What are your best words in a few minutes if you're a young novelist, how to go about it?
Write every single day. If you want to be a writer, you sit down and write. You don't miss a day. Get the first people to read it be people who love you so that they will be supportive and not smash your creativity into the dust.
Right.
Then once you have something together where you think it's actually worth showing it to somebody, resist the impulse to just publish it, but actually begin getting it to people who will look at it critically, but in a way that, again, is not going to smash you.
Right.
Be prepared to get your ego bruised. Don't react to well-intended criticism. Sleep on it.
Uh-huh.
I'll give you a for instance. My agent is very directorial, and he works with, you know, some of the best people in the world. He works with Ken Follett. He works with Nora Roberts. He has, you know, and his agency, in any given week, he can point to the New York Times bestseller list and say, well, a quarter of those are mine.
Wow.
So a typical letter from Al after he's read a manuscript is the first sentence. There's a lot of good stuff here, period, followed by, and this is why this manuscript really isn't working. And then it's two pages of, and so, you know, that's where the glass of brandy comes in. You read it, you know, that afternoon, you put it away, and then you come back to it in the morning, and there's going to be major stuff there and stuff you don't want to look at. For instance, you know, in one book, I had two villainous women, and one of the comments was, make them one character, which is absolutely the right thing to do. But it was a lot of work.
Right. And you had a good eye, you had a good ear, and that's what I was trying to get to people, is that you know, you did it right. You were very gentle in telling people to find someone they love first. It's like coming out. You come out to the easiest person first, right?
Yes, and then you work your way up to people who are professional.
Right. Or the tough ones, you know, the ones that are going to give you the right feedback, you know. Yeah, you're going to gay, but you're going to have to do something about that, you know, that face and hair, you know, or something like that. I live in Fort Lauderdale. I've turned bitter. No, I'm just kidding. I'm fine. Okay, great. So what's your next novel? Tell me about it.
The next one is going to be the follow-up to this one, which is going to be called Best Place to Die.
Best Place to Die.
And then hopefully by the end of the year, I will have my first urban fantasy up under my new name, which is going to be Jaspard Marx.
Ooh.
And that's going to be called Go to Hell.
Uh-huh. How do you come up with your names in your novels? You've got Barrett Conyers and Ida and Lil and all.
Oh, well, okay. Ida and Lil, that's my grandmother and aunt who got sort of reconfigured into them.
I got it.
And these are women who I adored.
Right.
And then Barrett, I went to medical school down in Emory in Atlanta, Georgia.
Huh?
And it was Conyers, Georgia.
Oh, my God.
That's how that all came about with my Barrett Conyers down there.
Like the dendrites are just firing, and you get like old things come up. That's so funny because it is true. That's I've heard this from other novels. I ask this question a lot where the words, and it's old boyfriends, you know, it's things from 25, 30 years ago. It's just totally insane. Listen, anybody want to call in? I got a minute or two to go. 805-830-8355. We had some callers, but they faded. They kind of got on and got off. Either we're having trouble with the callers, or they just got chicken because we were talking too much. We're having way too much fun. But listen, so are we continuing in the one after Vultures at Twilight? Is that going to be the Littlefield? Are we still going to be in Greenville?
Yeah, we're still going to be in Greenville, Connecticut. It's going to be Best Place to Die. It started out as Connecticut's Best Place to Die, but that was too long.
Right.
And that's just a good, fun novel where I'm, you know, these are a much lighter novel than some of the very dark kind of thrillers I've done.
Good.
It almost Vultures is almost like Who's Killing the Chefs of Europe kind of thing.
That's right. Listen, we've got 10 seconds to go. I want to thank you. This was so much fun. CharlesAtkins.com. Last name is spelled A-T-K-I-N-S. Those people you see, you've got clicks on your show page. Good night. Thank you so much.
Thanks so much, Nate.
Take care. Good night. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.